The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy from King Features. Weight loss pill causes distress. Question. I started taking Contrave 2 weeks ago. I made a huge mistake. I have had nausea, vomiting, migraine, headaches, constipation, horrible heartburn, blurry vision, and hot flashes, especially at night. I find myself eating more than usual because I am constantly trying to fight off the nausea by keeping something in my stomach. I have always encouraged my friends and family to try out their new prescriptions for a full month before giving up because of side effects. Although I consider myself pretty tough, I am going to actually throw in the towel and stop instead of increasing the dose tomorrow as prescribed. Answer. Contrave contains two different medications, the antidepressant bupropion and the opioid blocker naltrexone. Bupropion, or Zyban, has Food and Drug Administration approval to help people quit smoking. Naltrexone, or Revia, R-E-V-I-A, is approved for alcohol dependence. The combination has the FDA's blessing for weight loss. How good is Contrave for weight loss? In one clinical trial, subjects on the drug shed about 8 pounds more than people taking placebos. That was after 6 months. Question. I might have to go on a blood pressure lowering medication, but I am very reluctant to do so. I exercise regularly at the gym, lifting weights and doing cardio 5 days a week for an hour. My diet is very healthy, and at 5 feet 7 inches tall, I weigh between 115 and 117 pounds. Yet when I see a doctor, my blood pressure jumps to 150 over 90. Could this just be white coat syndrome? The doctors seem reluctant even to consider this. They want to hand me medications right away, regardless of any side effects. Answer. It is certainly possible that you have white coat hypertension, a condition in which blood pressure soars in the doctor's office. Presumably, this is due to anxiety around the interaction. To learn whether your blood pressure spikes only at those times or whether it is more generally elevated, you will need to measure it yourself at home. Consumer Reports highly rates the Omron, O-M-R-O-N, 10 series of home blood pressure monitors. Blood pressure must be measured correctly, both in the doctor's office as well as at home. Keep your feet on the floor, your back supported, your arms should rest on a horizontal surface at heart height. Avoiding milk solved chronic sinus pain. Question. Years ago, I used to wake up every morning with face aches, a.k.a. sinus pain. I went to many different doctors, all of whom prescribed antibiotics for a sinus infection. Then I became allergic to these drugs. An article I read said that many sinus issues are caused by an allergy to the milk protein casein, C-A-S-E-I-N. As an experiment, I stopped drinking milk and never had face aches again. I use unsweetened almond milk for my morning oatmeal, and all is well. Answer. The role of milk protein allergy in causing sinus inflammation is controversial. Allergies sometimes can cause nasal congestion as well as hives, rash, or swelling. Some research has linked cow's milk protein allergy to ear, nose, and throat problems in young children. There has been little, if any, research on whether this also holds for adults. We don't see any trouble in avoiding cow's milk if you find it makes you feel better. Antibiotics are often overprescribed for sinus congestion. A review of research in the New England Journal of Medicine, September 8, 2016, concluded that antibiotics are rarely helpful for acute sinusitis. Question. After I started using ashwagandha for my own stress and lack of restful sleep, I recommend that friends try it. Ashwagandha is part of the Indian Ayurvedic healing tradition that stretches back thousands of years. It has wide range of uses. Ashwagandha can be helpful in easing anxiety and insomnia and has anti-inflammatory activity. Some people have reported digestive distress, including nausea and diarrhea. Other side effects include drowsiness or headache. One visitor to our website reported an alarming drop in blood pressure. Question. I got a huge splinter in the end of my big toe. On the recommendation of a friend who is also a nurse, I put duct tape around the toe. The next morning when I took the tape off, there was the hunk of wood stuck to the tape. I am seriously grateful for the tip and want to share it with your readers. Answer, using a needle or a tweezer to get a splinter out of your skin can be tricky. What's more, it's often painful. After a time or two, children become unwilling to submit to this kind of first aid. From the Harvard Health Letter, Explaining High Blood Pressure, Ask the Doctor, by Dr. Anthony Komaroff, MD, Editor-in-Chief of the Harvard Health Letter. Question, what causes high blood pressure? Answer, my answer is going to start in your backyard. Stay with me. You're holding a hose. You turn on the water and it shoots through the hose and out the nozzle. The water is moving because it's under pressure. Similarly, when your heart beats, it creates pressure that enables your blood to water your body with the nutrients that are in your blood. Three things affect the amount of pressure that pushes blood through your body: how forcefully the heart pumps, how much blood is there, or how much blood there is, and how narrow the smallest blood vessels are. That last one may need some explanation. When you're watering plants and you want to stream the water to go further, what do? You make the nozzle smaller. Narrowing the opening through which the water flows increases the pressure, and the water then is able to reach the distant flower bed. What affects how hard the heart pumps? Several body hormones, particularly epinephrine and norepinephrine, whip, quote-unquote, the heart to beat faster and harder. These hormones are made by your adrenal glands, which are located just on top of your kidneys. Exercising and fear cause increases in these two hormones, which is good. Your heart needs to work harder when you exercise or when you may need to run away from something frightening. However, chronic anxiety and stress also increase these hormones, and that's not good. During a stressful day, no good purpose is served by your heart beating faster and harder and by your blood pressure going up. Some uncommon diseases, not just chronic anxiety and stress, also can raise levels of these hormones. What affects how much blood you have? Blood is part water. Therefore, the amount of fluid you drink and the amount you lose through sweating and urination affect how much fluid there is in your blood. Blood is also part salt. Salty foods and salt added to your foods can increase the fluid in your blood. That's why people with high blood pressure are urged to go light on salt and often given diuretic drugs to help their kidneys eliminate excess fluid and salt. There are also some uncommon diseases that can increase the amount of fluid in your blood. What affects how narrow your small blood vessels or arterioles are? These blood vessels have circles of muscle in their walls that can clamp down and narrow the vessels. The same hormone, norepinephrine, that whips your heart to beat faster and harder also causes the blood vessels to clamp down, raising blood pressure. In other words, high blood pressure, like most diseases, is influenced by our genes and also by our lifestyle. Currently, we can do a lot more about the latter. Fight back against muscle weakness. Pinpoint the cause and take steps to preserve your mobility and independence. Muscle weakness is sneaky. It often appears gradually and makes once simple tasks harder, like having to rock back and forth to get out of a chair or tug a few times on the car door to open it. More than an inconvenience, muscle weakness has a domino effect on health. It slows your metabolism, how fast your body burns energy, puts more pressure on your joints, hurts your posture, throws off your balance, and limits your mobility. The bad news is it gets worse. You walk slower and become dependent on others to do things. Physical limitations lead to social limitations, and there's a downward spiral from there, says Marion Hannon, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and co-director of the Musculoskeletal Research Center at Hebrew Senior Life's Institute for Aging Research. Why are your muscles weak? We all get a little weaker as we age, a condition called sarcopenia. We begin losing muscle fibers, mass, and function starting in our 30s and 40s, but we don't typically see it until our 60s and 70s, Hannon says. Beyond aging, there are many possible causes of muscle weakness. These are some of the most common. Number one, inactivity. When you don't use your muscles, maybe you're a couch potato, you have chronic pain from arthritis or an old injury, or you were hospitalized recently, your muscles waste away. Secondly, medication side effects. Some medications are linked to muscle weakness. Corticosteroids such as prednisone regularly weaken muscles. Cholesterol-lowering medicines such as lovastatin, simvastatin, or atorvastatin weaken them in some people. Number three, an underlying condition. Many disorders can cause muscle weakness, such as neuropathy, which causes numbness, tingling, or weakness in the hands or feet, carpal tunnel syndrome, which is compression of a nerve in the wrist, or the aftermath of a stroke. Energy-robbing conditions. Some diseases rob otherwise healthy muscle fibers of the energy they need. Certain sleep disorders and autoimmune disease, such as thyroid disorder, chronic fatigue syndrome, depression, or even a weak heart that pumps too little oxygen-rich blood to the muscles. With these conditions, your muscles may initially feel strong with activity, but they rapidly fatigue and lose power. What you should do. If you suspect your muscle weakness is due to an underlying condition, then a visit to the doctor may be in order. An exam will include a full medical history and physical evaluation, and possibly blood tests or a test to measure how well your nerves send information to your muscles. If you're generally healthy but suffering from the effects of inactivity, it's time to start a regular exercise program. With or without disease, a regular program of strengthening and stretching the muscles will make a big difference. Hannon recommends working with a physical therapist to develop a program tailored to your abilities and particular muscle weakness. You'll improve what you have and figure out a workaround if there's something you can't do, Hannon notes. Don't expect quick success. You won't regain 100% of the muscle strength you had 10 years ago, Hannon says. But remember that you want to be functional and do what you want to do, whether that's playing tennis or going for a bike ride with your grandkids. Strengthening your muscles can help you get there. Don't ignore sudden weakness. Sudden muscle weakness could be a sign of a stroke, the interruption of blood flow to the brain that occurs when a blood vessel is blocked or ruptures. Stroke weakness usually occurs on one side of the body, especially in the face, arm, or leg. It may also be accompanied by at least one of the following: dizziness, loss of balance, trouble walking, blurred vision, difficulty speaking, a terrible headache, confusion, and coordination problems. If any of these symptoms occur, call 911 immediately. Do not attempt to drive yourself or someone else with these symptoms to the hospital. Paramedics know which hospitals are best equipped to treat stroke. Top four reasons why you're not sleeping through the night. Unhealthy habits and underlying conditions contribute to interrupted sleep. The world looks sunny after a great night's rest, but it's a different story when sleep is frequently interrupted. A lack of Z's makes it harder to think and easier to become irritated and anxious. In the long term, inadequate sleep increases your risk for obesity, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and even premature death. That makes it important to figure out what's interrupting your sleep. It could be your age. Number one, we see more interrupted sleep in older adults, although you shouldn't automatically blame frequent walking on your age, frequent waking on your age, says Dr. Suzanne Bertisch, an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Sometimes older adults find they wake up early in the morning when they feel they should be sleeping. But that often reflects your schedule for sleeping and waking, not disrupted sleep. Your circadian rhythm or sleep-wake cycle may dramatically shift when you're older, causing you to get sleepy earlier. So if 8 p.m. is the start of your biologic night, then your natural wake time may be around 4 a.m., Dr. Bertisch says. Number two, it could be your lifestyle. One of the common causes of disrupted sleep is lifestyle, including any of the following habits. Drinking alcohol within 4 hours of bedtime. A nightcap may help you fall asleep, but it also can interrupt sleep later in the night and can cause more trips to the bathroom. Eating within a few hours of bedtime. Lying down with a full stomach can promote heartburn, which makes it harder to fall asleep and stay asleep. Napping too much. Long naps in the afternoon or later makes it harder to stay asleep at night. Consuming too much caffeine. Caffeine in coffee, tea, and sodas blocks a brain chemical called adenosine that helps you sleep. Go light on caffeine-containing foods and drinks beyond the early afternoon. Dr. Pertisch says changing these habits can help reduce disrupted sleep, sometimes quickly. Number three, it could be your medication. Some medications can cause nighttime waking. Examples include some antidepressants, beta blockers to treat high blood pressure, cold remedies containing alcohol, corticosteroids to treat inflammation or asthma. Dr. Bertisch recommends asking your doctor if your medication might be the culprit and if there's a different time of the day to take it or another drug that won't interfere with your sleep. Number four, it could be an underlying condition. Many chronic health problems can throw a monkey wrench into a sound sleep. These are some of the most common in older age. Anxiety or depression. Worries or a depressed mood may make it hard to fall asleep and stay asleep. Enlarged prostate gland, which is benign prostate hyperplasia or hypertrophy or BPH. The urge to empty the bladder wakes men with BPH throughout the night. Chronic pain. It's hard to stay asleep when you're hurting. And it's a two-way street. Sleep deprivation worsens the next day pain. Neuropathy. Tingling, numbness, or pain in the hands and feet can cause frequent wakening. Sleep apnea. Loud snoring and brief awakenings during the night may be signs you have sleep apnea, which causes brief pauses in breathing at night and leads to daytime sleepiness. How to cope? There's no need to live with a burden of disrupted sleep. Change your lifestyle if you feel it's interfering with your sleep, or talk to your doctor about ways to better treat or possibly investigate underlying conditions, and practice good sleep hygiene. Wake up at the same time each day. Avoid electronic devices which emit light and stimulate the brain at least 2 hours before bed. Sleep in a quiet, dark, cool space. Get regular exercise, but not within an hour of bedtime. If you are already practicing healthy sleep behaviors but still have trouble sleeping, consider cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, CBT-1-I. CBT-I is a proven way to treat insomnia through relaxation techniques, talk therapy, and adjustment of the amount of time you spend in bed. It works with your body's natural controllers of sleep to reset the brain to achieve healthier sleep. The good news, you can boost sleep quality and regain that sunny morning feeling. When you sleep better, says Dr. Bertisch, you're more likely to see improvements in your day-to-day function, concentration, energy levels, and quality of life. Taking medications on the road. Ask questions about rules and get supplies in advance. When it's time for an overnight or extended trip, there are lots of things to pack, your clothes, toiletries, and maybe important documents. But sometimes medicine isn't at the top of the list. I hear about people forgetting medications at home, not bringing enough for the whole trip, or packing them in a suitcase that gets lost, says Dr. Suzanne Salomon, Associate Chief of Gerontology at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Whether you're staying across town or traveling around the world, consider the following strategies to help you maintain your medication regimen. Determine how much you'll need. Bring enough medication to last the length of your trip, plus a little extra in case you drop a pill or have delays, suggests Dr. Lynn H. Chin, director of the Travel Medicine Center at Harvard-affiliated Mount Auburn Hospital. How much extra is appropriate? It depends where you're going and for how long. For a one-week trip, several days' worth would be fine. If you're going to a rural area where health care is questionable, you might need more. Talk to your doctor about the amount and keep these points in mind. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security advises carrying no more than a 90-day supply. Bringing more raises questions about whether you're selling medication. It may take time to obtain extra medication, so work that into your preparations. Inquire early about oxygen. Bringing oxygen on a trip is tricky. The rules vary by the type of oxygen products you use, such as a tank or a portable oxygen concentrator, and by your means of transportation, airplane, train, bus, or ship. For example, not all airlines allow the use of portable oxygen concentrators. Trains usually allow concentrators and sometimes allow oxygen tanks on board with limitations. Check the rules well in advance to find out what's allowed and whether you or your doctor need to fill out any forms. Pack medication securely. Be careful if you choose to bring some of your medications along and a multi-compartment pill box. If it accidentally opens, the pills are all over the place, and you may not know which pill is which, she says. Just in case, secure the box with a rubber band. It's safer, and in many states and countries, required to leave each prescription medication in its original labeled container. The label should show who prescribed the drug and when, as well as the drug name, dose, and your name. Pack your medication in a clear plastic bag and keep it in a carry-on so it's always with you. Use extra caution when packing injectable medications and other drugs that must be kept cold. They're safest when they're packed in a manufacturer-provided case or cooler, Dr. Chen says. Liquid or gel medications are allowed on airplanes in excess of the standard 3.4-ounce liquid limits, but you must inform security that you have medical liquids and you may be asked to open the containers. Prepare documentation. For travel in some countries, prescription labels aren't enough to authenticate your medications. Check the government websites of countries to which you are traveling. It may be necessary to bring a copy of your prescriptions as well as a letter from your physician on letterhead explaining what the medications are and why you need them. This is especially important for controlled substances such as prescription pain medications. If you're traveling to another country, consider having the letter translated into the language of your destination. One last tip, bring a master list. Keep a separate list of your medications and doses in case you lose anything. Include the name, address, fax number, and phone number of a pharmacy where the medications can be called in. Research your destination. When traveling abroad, remember the medication laws vary. Some common U.S. medications such as pseudoephedrine or Sudafed and opioids are illegal in other countries or require government authorization prior to your arrival. And some countries limit the amount of medication you can bring with you to a 30-day supply or less. There isn't a central website that lists medication rules in each country. The Centers for Disease Control advises calling the embassy of the country you're going to visit to ask if your medication is permitted there. Should you use an active workstation at home? These desks are tied to both health benefits and risks. Active workstations aren't just for the office. The desks that enable you to stand, walk, or cycle while working are showing up in schools, libraries, airports, hotels, and even coffee shops. But is an active workstation so important you should use one at home, and is it safe for an older adult? Why they're popular. Active workstations help people reduce time spent sitting. Prolonged periods of inactivity are linked to heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and even an early death. All of our body functions, including blood flow, blood pressure, heart and lung function, and blood sugar processing improve when we expend energy with physical activity, but they decline with inactivity. Standing desks. A standing desk is made so that a person can stand while working. These desks are available in fixed heights, think of a tall, skinny table, or adjustable heights. which you can raise when you want to stand and lower when you want to sit, with a variety of desktop shapes, rectangular, curved, or L-shaped. You can also turn a regular or low desk into a standing desk with a converter or work surface you place on top of your existing desk and raise to the desired height. Standing desk pros. When you stand, you expend 20 to 25% more energy than when you sit. Standing activates enzymes that process fats in the body. Standing also puts your muscles to work as you maintain your posture and balance. Standing desk cons. Studies that have examined prolonged standing show blood can pool in the legs and increase the risk for varicose veins. A standing desk isn't right for someone with balance or foot problems or someone with arthritis in the low back, hip, or knee. Standing for long periods overloads the joints and back and can worsen pain. Prices for standing desks range from a few hundred to a few thousand dollars. Desk converters start at about $100. A no-cost option, use a high countertop or tall filing cabinet at home. Treadmill desk. A treadmill desk is a standing desk with a walking-only treadmill attached below. These treadmills are designed to move at very slow speeds, like 1 to 2 miles per hour, for many hours at a time. You can also buy a special under-desk treadmill to use beneath the standing desk you already have. Treadmill desk pros. Very slow walking expends a little more energy than standing. Plus, it's easier on your back as long as you don't have back problems. When you're moving, you don't put as much pressure on your back as when you're standing. Treadmill desk cons. Even slow walking can aggravate existing back and joint pain. Also, it may be harder to concentrate when you're walking. It takes lots of practice to be able to type and walk at the same time. Avoid this workstation if you have balanced back or joint problems. Prices start at about $500 for an under-desk treadmill and $1,000 for an integrated treadmill desk. Prices can climb to several thousand dollars depending on the treadmill motor and other bells and whistles. For instance, some come with computer programs that track your activity. Cycling desks. A cycling or bike desk looks like a stationary bike with a desktop attached. Cycling desk pros. Staying seated while being active takes pressure off your hip and knee joints, but allows you to be active while you're working. It's easier to type and when using a cycling desk compared with a treadmill desk. Cons. Using a cycling desk may make it harder to concentrate. People whose balance may be thrown off by pedaling and shifting weight should avoid this desk. Cycling desk prices start at $200 for a small folding version to well above $1,000 for a large stationary style. A review of 12 studies on active workstations. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Stay healthy.